Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Grok Radio. The following broadcast is made possible by the friends and partners of CYI Worldwide Ministries and Grok Radio. And the views expressed in this program and by our guests may not necessarily reflect those of CYI Worldwide Ministries or its staff. And now, enjoy the show.
You stand on the shore of the ocean watching the tide come in. You sense the call of the sea beckoning to take you in further. You step forward little by little, not knowing what to expect, but expecting more. You keep going as the ocean calls you to enter in to deeper waters.
I'm Nick Peters. I am the host of the Deeper Waters podcast. Thank you very much for coming today. We were supposed to have a guest. Whether he's going to show up or not right now, I'm not sure. It seems to be on a lack of communication. I was using Facebook. He was using Skype. And I didn't get the Skype message, and I don't think he got the Facebook message. So I've told him on Skype, if he shows up, we're ready. We can have show up late, that's fine, we'll do what we can, but if we don't, we don't, okay? So, sorry for any disappointment there, but today we are still going to talk about Jehovah's Witnesses, because either way, the show must go on, and something that I learned from my years in college is that a good speaker has to be prepared to speak at a moment's notice. My old church is something I had to do often. Sometimes I'd be asked to teach a class for an hour, maybe about 2 minutes before class started, and had to come up with something. So, yeah, I'm going to be able to do this. But I sure would appreciate your joining me in and doing it with me. If you would like to talk about Jehovah's Witnesses with me, my number is 714-242-5180. Zero, as how you call into the program and get in, and as you can imagine, all lines are open right now. Now, recently, I have had Jehovah's Witnesses come by, because I've been doing some writing about Jehovah's Witnesses independently in my blog, so if you're checking my blog at deeperwaters.wordpress.com, you're not going to see a lot about Jehovah's Witnesses, if anything, right now, but I have been doing my own writing, and in that time, I was saying, Lord, it would really help out my writing if you would send some Jehovah's Witnesses by here. Thankfully, God answered that prayer, and we have had witnesses come on an off and on basis here, and there have been some rather enjoyable dialogues. I think so far I've had 4 witnesses come by. One guy is the same every time, but he's brought 3 different people with him, which I find to be incredibly fascinating. And I can tell you, Jehovah's Witnesses, or as they're sometimes called, JWs, they really are, by and large, some of the nicest people I meet. Such, I really do admire their zeal for enthusiasm. Of course, I could also think that if whether or not I'd spend eternity in Jehovah's Kingdom depended on my going door to door, yeah, I guess I'd be a bit more enthused as well. But despite their zeal, they are incredibly wrong. In fact, when people have asked me what Jehovah's Witnesses have believed, I've often tried to give a short summary by saying, think of what Orthodox Christians believe. Jehovah's Witnesses believe the opposite. And in many cases, that is true. Of course, not in all cases, but it is in some. For instance, when you talk about the resurrection of Jesus, Orthodoxy holds the resurrection was physical. Jehovah's Witnesses say it was spiritual. Orthodoxy says Jesus is fully God in nature. Jehovah's Witnesses say he wasn't. In fact, they say he was Michael the Archangel. We hold the Trinity. they deny a trinity. And then there are several of our secondary beliefs. For instance, the Jehovah's Witnesses are opposed to war of any sort. Now, to be fair, of course, there are a number of Christians who are pacifists, meaning they hold that exact same view. Jehovah's Witnesses are also annihilationists, and some of my evangelical friends, like Chris Date of the Fear Projects podcast, has asked me to stress that not all people who are annihilationists are Jehovah's Witnesses or heretics, and I agree with that. I think they're wrong, but they are still orthodox. And they have, the Jehovah's Witnesses, they have a stance against blood transfusions. Like, a sure way you can recognize Jehovah's Witness, if you're in the checkout line of a store and you see them getting out a wad or some out of a purse that has the no blood card on it, then you are in the presence of a Jehovah's Witness. And usually if I'm reading some book about Christianity, since I'm not too forward in my approach and usually like to let other people start the dialogue, I try to prominently display what I'm reading in the hopes that they'll really want to talk about it some. I'm one of those people who actually loves talking about Jehovah's Witnesses and talking with them. And we took my wife to the dentist about last month, I think it was. She's getting her teeth cleaned, and someone asked me what I do, and I say I study apologetics. And they don't know what that is, so I explained to them. And this other hygienist over there starts talking about how fascinated she is by what I'm saying. And I said, what denomination are you? And she says, well, I'm a Bible student. Now, when you hear the word Bible student, a lot of times, take it as a code word, meaning Jehovah's Witness. And I didn't say anything about that then, but I just kind of asked her to clarify her position some. And she said, well, I'm one of Jehovah's Witnesses. In fact, that could be how I got to meet the Jehovah's Witnesses I had, because I said, you know, if you want to continue this, my address is right here. When we took my wife in to see a dentist, you've got my information, and you feel free to take it to your congregation and let them come by and visit me. Yeah, that's how eager I am for a chance to talk with Jehovah's Witnesses. And so when you see these Bible students again, you can think that they are Jehovah's Witnesses, and you will be right most of the time. We should all be students of the Bible, but that labor seems to specifically be one witnesses have taken on themselves. And as you can guess from what I've said so far, no, I do not consider Jehovah's Witnesses Christians, which, my Raven, I urge you, when they come to your door, do not slam the door in their face, please. If you are busy, and sometimes you will be busy, open the door and tell them the truth. Not the truth that they're lost people and God's going to judge them and such. That is true, but just say, I'm really glad to see you. I really wish I could talk, but right now I'm heading out to work or heading out to some other place. Can we arrange for a later time? And usually they'll be more than happy to do this. And if they give you any watchtowers, take them by all means. And find a lot of material you can use against them in there. So, what are some more things we can learn about Jehovah's Witnesses here? Well, the Jehovah's Witnesses started in the mid to late 1800s. There was a time that this movement came through the New England area, and it had a huge emphasis on conversion, very little emphasis on discipling, which, thank God, we got past that today. It is so good that we don't have to worry about telling people they need to be disciples of the Lord now. It's good that we've got past the point where we just say, well, have an altar call and have them come down, and that's enough. Oh, wait. We haven't done that yet. That same mindset is still going on today. And it happened in an area of New York called the Burned Over District. Back from my area, Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses both came out. And can you imagine if we had had proper discipling going on back then, we might not have to have this show today to deal with Jehovah's Witnesses, because the heresy would have been dealt with right then and right there. Same deal with Mormons. So keep in mind, Christians listening to this, when we are talking about the cults, which Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons are cults, we are talking about the unpaid bills of a church. They exist because we have not been doing our job, and we need to be doing it better. So, this student shows up, whose name is Charles Taz Russell, and he wants to be leading a Bible study on his own, and he has some contrary views. He is an annihilationist, which I've said that's not heretical. It was definitely contrary. Still is contrary today. And most notably, he denied the Trinity. Now, this was seen as a stance that was rational. It always is that way, that someone shows up and thinks they're being rational for not noticing something the church had noticed, had failed to notice for so long. And this just gets me to the point, please, people, realize that many of these claims that we deal with today, they're not new claims. They have been answered in the past numerous times before. You go back, you can read St. Augustine, Thomas Aquinas, Athanasius, several thinkers from the early church. They were dealing with these kinds of arguments long ago. They were dealing with the objections to the Trinity. It's quite likely that you will not meet someone who has an objection to the doctrine of the Trinity that has not been thought of in 2,000 years. But it's part of the modern hubris that we have in our society that we think that we know better than everyone who came before us. Just as an example, think about the movement we have going to redefine marriage. We know better than everyone who came before us. Well, Charles Taz Russell was thinking that way, and the local congregations weren't exactly happy, and quite justifiably so. But he started his own movement, and an unusual thing he also did was he started predicting when Jesus was going to come back. Now, interestingly, the original date was set for 1874. So that people probably don't realize, and as we know, that was wrong. And so he later had it changed to 1914. But his students would gather around him, and he would teach him. He wrote this book, Studies in the Scriptures. And based on the long and short of it, that's kind of how the Watchtower got started. Went on after him under the presidency of Judge Rutherford, probably one of the most famous leaders of the Watchtower movement. And today, the Watchtower is in kind of a crisis. I have a good friend who usually gives me an update on how many members are left. Because if you go to the Book of Revelation, you can read about the 144,000. The Jehovah's Witnesses take that kind of literally. I say kind of literally because 144,000 in the text are said to be of the 12 tribes of Israel. They take that as metaphorical. They take the number as literal. I mean, I take both of them as metaphorical, so I'm the consistent one. But you had to have been a Jehovah's Witness before 1935 to be part of 144,000. Now, if you became a Jehovah's Witness at, say, age 18 in 1935, You added up today, 78 years later, you would be 96 years old today. Can you kind of see why it is that Jehovah's Witnesses are in a problem? Where you need one other bit of information. In order to be part of the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses, you have to be one of the original 144,000. So everyone who's on the governing body has to have been a witness before 1935. We are in definite serious straits here. In a decade or two, it's going to be very fascinating to see what the Jehovah's Witnesses do and may kind of have to flip-flop on this issue. Especially since they've done this so many times in the past. You know, it's put them in problematic stances because the Watchtower magazine and what they publish, it is really for the witness on par with the scripture itself. In fact, they've even said that if you stay away from their material and just read the Bible on your own, you're going to go into darkness. Yeah, that's one of their claims in their book. And when you meet them, they have several books. I urge you, take any that you can. The main one they have right now that they have you going through is What Does the Bible Really Teach? Which, if you want to know, don't read this book. But it's a fascinating little book. It's, I got a little around 223 pages here. And they lead you through questions. And there are questions at the bottom of the page, and the answers are supposed to be in the paragraphs. When I come back from the break, which we're going to be having soon, I plan on talking about a visit a friend of mine and I paid to a Kingdom Hall, and we'll discuss those kinds of questions more. But those of you who are avid readers like I am, you kind of find your intelligence insulted when you read a Jehovah's Witness book, because they are written on a sixth grade level. I pick one of these books and I feel like I'm in elementary school and I'm reading the Weekly Reader again. And this kind of goes with the way the witnesses approach things, that they are automatically the ones with the knowledge and every other position is just inferior automatically, which can make reaching a Jehovah's Witness incredibly difficult to do. And I'll tell you, part of my approach is that, you know, I don't like to play all my cards at once. If you do that, I think you put the Jehovah's Witness on the defensive entirely, way too much. And I don't like to do that. But at the same time, I want to kind of flex the intellectual muscles around witness, because I want them to know, hey, they're dealing with someone serious here, which can give them the idea of, hey, imagine what it can mean if we get this one to come to our cause. It's a position that requires a lot of wisdom in order to know what to say and what not to say. I definitely don't want to show that I'm someone who's read the Watchtower material, which I have, not all of it, but a good deal of it. For instance, the reasoning book that they have, I've gone through it myself. And if you do a Project Jehovah's Witnesses, you should at least read their book, Reasoning from the Scriptures. Because whenever they get stuck in a bind, they don't know what to ask, what to say in response to a question, and you see them opening up a little book, chances are the book that they are opening up is the reasoning book. It's where they get most of the information. It's where double the size of What Does the Bible Really Teach? Now, we're still waiting for our guest. If you want to be a guest for yourself, call in. The number is 714-242-5180. My name is Nick Peters. I'm the host of the Deeper Waters podcast. And we will be back after this break.
Join Unituber and Army Girl for Christ as they discuss spiritual warfare, spiritual preparedness, the end times, life issues, and personal and spiritual growth. At www.truthradionet.com. Truthradionet.com.
Check out CYIWorldwide.com. CYIWorldwide.com, home of Grok Radio. Free music downloads, advice, prayer, and support. CYIWorldwide.com. Do you grok?
Okay, we are back to the Deeper Waters podcast. I'm Nick Peters. I'm your host, 714-242-5180. Whether our guests will show up to talk about Jehovah's Witnesses or not, I don't know. There was some mixed communication. And, well, this happens. So we're still going on, and I'm going to be talking now about the time that a friend of mine and I went to a Kingdom Hall. This was when I lived in Charlotte. It was before Allie showed up on the scene. We were both very much single then, and now he's still single, and I'm very much happily married. But we had some witnesses coming by. There were a couple of older black gentlemen, very nice guys. In fact, we found some camaraderie of them. They had a past war experience before they became witnesses, obviously. And my friend happened to have a map of, I believe, the Pacific area made of silk. And, oh, they were very impressive. And we'd have these conversations going on, and we knew where things were going. So we'd kind of do this thing, I call it laying out traps in advance. For instance, at one point, they wanted to ask what we think love is. And I thought about some really quick, and I'm trying to think, okay, I want to stress that God is love later on, and have that be working out in the Trinity. So I want to have a one God with three persons, but I don't want to be overt right now. What do I say? And pretty quickly, I think what I said was, like, love is a singular reaching out beyond itself into the plural. And I'm like, oh, dang, that's beautiful. And I'm seeing them thinking, yes, thank you. Because right now, you've fallen into my trap. When the time comes, I'll be ready to spring it. Which, if we had gotten to that point, I would have said, you remember what I said about love back then? Yeah, this is why that's so important. Because if you got a monad concept, it seems to me your God has to create in order to have someone to love. With a triune concept, you don't have that. You have a God who's complete in himself. But anyway, we kept meeting with these guys, and they were very impressed with our answers, and so surprised, because with one answer, we could spend about 10 or 15 minutes discussing the question. And my friend and I, we didn't really get that too much. We figured, hey, that's what anybody does. In fact, one thing that we did with them, there was not too far from where we lived, within walking distance, there was a Jewish cafe diner. It later became a pizzeria, a place my wife and I both enjoyed going to. And we took our Jehovah's Witness guest to that diner one time, and we let them know in advance that, hey, we'd just like to take you all out to lunch. By the way, we did the exact same thing with the Mormons. In fact, when the Mormons came, we'd regularly take out pizza and get some Gatorade, and we just have a good time together because we have the money then. And you kind of think that these guys don't usually get treated well. They're far away from home. They're away from their families. Why not make them feel at home, and that can make them easier to talk with? They can be more at ease and more open to what we have to say as well. I consider it a worthwhile investment. If we have the money, I'd still be doing this today. Unfortunately, we don't. But this was just part of our evangelism. We went out and we didn't really talk religion too much. In fact, I think we talked about World War II more than anything else. But they were saying that what we should do sometime is come to a Kingdom Hall service. But sure, we'll come. Come on, these guys don't know we're Christian apologists. They also don't know about our training. They didn't know that I was a seminary student, for instance. I said I was in school and studying philosophy, both of which were true. In fact, if I was speaking today, I'm getting ready to apply for a master's in New Testament, I'd say I'm in school and I'm studying history. That would be true, but it wouldn't be the whole truth. But it'd still be true. So, they invite us, a couple of apologists, to go to a Kingdom Hall. Now, I'd gone a few times to the Mormon church in Charlotte. And if you go to one Mormon service, they're all pretty much the same. Even when we had someone from a quorum of the 70 show up, it was still the exact same thing. He gave a testimony. That was pretty much it. These people only rely on the testimony, and we had a group of kids that would be running around during the service, so you couldn't hardly hear anything the speaker was saying anyway. And, of course, there's a creepy hymn that Mormons have of praise to the man. If you don't know it, look it up and be prepared to be creeped out. So I'd been to one of those a few times, but Kingdom Hall, they probably won't have testimony, but it'll probably be pretty similar. Well, I've been wrong before, and I was wrong again. In fact, to this day, I consider the Kingdom Hall to be one of the creepiest places I have ever been in. I call it Indoctrination 101. I just could not be prepared for what I was going to see. Hold on, it looks like we have someone who's wanting to call into the show. Mia, get him on the air. Carlo, are you on the air? Hello? Okay, that's alright. It could just be someone who's wanting to do some work for the show here, so my bad if that's the case and I don't recognize it. But anyway, back to what I was saying. Kingdom Hall, one of the creepiest places I have been in. We go into this place for the worship ceremony. It's kind of like an auditorium. We have these seats set out, not pews, seats, kind of like folding chairs and such made out there. And we sit down and we hear some music coming in, if you can call it music. Because I've pretty much got a tin ear. I mean, for me, my idea of playing some awesome music is turning on Final Fantasy Music Radio. Okay? I am not someone who really gets into music a lot. But I was listening to this and I was thinking, there is something really creepy about this music. In fact, when we got in the car and left, one of the first things my friend, who was in my roommate also, said to me was, Did you notice the music? You know, I am so glad I am not the only one who noticed it. Because it was entirely monotone. It was like a piano music, but there was no piano anywhere that we saw. It was an instrument done in through a tape or recording of some sort and played in, like I said, the monotone style. I really can't describe it much to you beyond that, but I can tell you it was really quite frightening for me to hear. Now, my friend would like to this day still to get one of the hymnals. Because when you hear it, the music is just so odd what they're singing, because they're singing about how much they'd like their enemies to be destroyed and things of that sort. And I see someone, same call in here again. We'll see if this is a caller or not. I haven't been notified of anything. So you're on the air.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
All right, so there's no feedback, is it?
I hear a little bit of static in the back, but that's fine. I can still hear you.
All right, thank you. I'm a non-dogmatic. I'm a friend of, I'll say a Facebook friend of Minister Grock.
Uh-huh.
He's a positive individual.
Yep.
He's not a conquistador.
Mm-hmm.
But anyone that's pushing truth, I'm with that.
Mm-hmm.
Saying that we can agree to truth, I'm with that. And I heard you talking about Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yep.
You know, to me, like anybody else, however, I do find a few of their doctrines a bit odd. But to me, as any religion is, it's but a different language. I've been in the hall. I've had a few of my hall friends, apparently, when they go out and they come to my home and knock on the door, and I invite them in, or I'll stand outside and discuss the Bible many times. When they're referring to a verse, I know which verse they're referring to, and often quote it before they get to it. You know, just because I know the Bible, it doesn't mean that I'm any, you know, specific denomination. This is just like a language so that I can talk to my brothers and sisters, you know, and we can agree on truth. But, you know, my Jehovah's Witness friends, you know, I don't want to classify and judge them, but so far the behavior has been a bit one way and narcissistic, with an exception of two. And I really can't put that clothing on them, because to me, you know, like Minister Grock, what I know of him, you know, he would be a good Muslim, a good Christian, a good Buddhist, a good Jehovah's Witness. He would be a good whatever, because of what he's dealing with. But I do find some of the Jehovah's Witness customs, I heard someone else say earlier, Mormons, you know, I do find them a bit odd, and, you know, and I'm saying odd in the sense that some things one can accept as a belief, another thing a person can accept as faith. But it's something that is meant to be logical, and at the same breath, it's purely illogical. You know, it goes beyond any type of religion or dogma. It goes with the war of self. And if you're not familiar with the truth, which is God to me, if you're not familiar with it, they won't recognize it when it makes
okay, you're breaking up a lot here.
I apologize, but I'm enjoying what I'm hearing. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Let me talk about that some. Okay, I can't say Jehovah's Witnesses are my brothers and sisters, because they don't follow the Jesus that I see in the Bible. As for anything said about Grock, I'm not going to comment on that one. I do agree that he's got a lot of gusto of what he does, and it's a good thing he's on our side. But I really can't see them as Christians due to their belief in a different Jesus and going against what has been taught in the church from the very beginning. And I do agree with the caller that they do tend to be one-sided and narcissistic, and despite what's said about judging, I'm not afraid to do so, since I think the judging that we're one against in Matthew 7 is hypocritical judging without knowledge. We are commanded to judge in many ways, and we are to judge what is essential and who Jesus really is. And if the witnesses have that question wrong, then we can't join fellowship with them. Regardless of how nice they are, regardless of how sincere they are. Now, if you'd like to respond to that or respond to anything else you're hearing, you can call in also. The number is 714-242-5180. But getting back to this Kingdom Hall visit that we had here, now I think what I just said is that their hymns include messages about all the apostates and such, the wicked people, which would include my roommate and I, being destroyed in a fire when Christ comes, which brings a, oh, it's so nice to know all these people around here are singing about our destruction so happily. Which, keep in mind, I do agree with what Moody said once. If you ever teach about hell, and I don't care if you're an annihilationist or not, he said, you'd better do it with tears in your eyes. We shouldn't be happy about that one. That should be a good motivator for us. Anyway, you have all these people singing all these songs, and regularly we would hear these words with audience participation when someone says, we are so thankful for the faithful and discreet slave providing food in the proper time. Some of you think I'm mocking out there. I am not. That is exactly how it sounded. And it was pretty much that being said verbatim, over and over. Now, when it came to the discussion of a question, the book of they'd read something and then they'd get a question and answer, it was then my roommate and I found out exactly why our discussions with them were so different than what they were expecting. Because when they asked a question, someone would answer from a book, and they would answer word for word what the book said. No variation whatsoever. Back once, during that, we kept noticing there, it was this young kid, he's probably a teenager, who was just so eager in answering all the questions. And I mean, he seemed like he'd be really bright. But there he is, just answering all these questions. And I was like, I feel so sorry for this kid right now, not knowing that he doesn't realize what he's getting into. And this service went on for, I think, about 3 hours or so. Hearing this thanks the faithful and discreet slave over and over. If there's ever been a time I think I've really thought the presence of evil was around me, it was there. And I was so thankful when we got out of there. Of course, before we got out, we got love bombed. I mean, we have these witnesses coming all around us, wanting to shake us, wanting to get to meet us and such, and we just wanted to get out of there. And I do remember them coming up to me and taking my hand and shaking and saying their name, and my aspie self, which is normally antisocial around people and very nervous, was doubly so in this case. That my roommate there, I had to say what I already knew to do. He said, say your name. And so that's what I did, very, very quietly. If you've ever seen, for instance, Monk, I can take my hands and say, I'm Monk, Adrian Monk. That's the exact way that I was, except we're a whole lot shyer with it. So anytime I go by a Kingdom Hall now, I think, yeah, that's what they're doing. And these people meet about 3 or 4 times a week. They're getting this indoctrination. What does that have to do with us? Well, you'll find out when we come back after this break.
Are you tired of the same old corporate Christian music on the radio? Check out Music Surge on Grok Radio, playing Christian music that doesn't suck. Download episodes now at CYIWorldwide.com. Hey, this is Minister Grok. Thanks for listening. Although Grok Radio is free, there are costs to upkeep the website, podcast, and purchase Bibles and materials for street ministry. And while we are happy to pay this ourselves out of pocket, we will gladly accept any gifts if you feel led to support the shows and our street ministry. You can send a gift or love offering through our website at CYIWorldwide.com. Thanks for your support, and God bless.
Okay, I'm Nick Peters. We are back to the Deeper Waters podcast. Today, the topic is Jehovah's Witnesses. If you want to call in, give me a call. The number is 714-242-5180. Now, when we left, I was saying that the witnesses meet three or four times a week, and they meet for a number of hours each time. What does that have to do with us? Well, usually we meet for at the most 2 hours a week, generally, for church service, meaning 1 hour for Sunday school, 1 hour for church. You could have a small group or a Sunday evening service for one more hour later on, and you could have a group that meets on Wednesday nights. And then that's pretty much it. Now, I do know there are several churches out there that do differently, and if you're one of them, I would really love to hear from you on this topic, but when we are meeting, we're usually not also having the big focus on doctrine that the Jehovah's Witnesses are. It's more about how we feel about topics, or helping us out with problems that we struggle with, or things of that sort. Now, that's fine insofar as it goes. But that shouldn't be the focus. Now, I understand. The church is supposed to help individuals in need. That includes working through emotional, social issues, and things of that sort. That's why you need good group fellowship. I agree with that. But we need a root for that. We need to know why it is. We don't need to just comfort with the gospel. We need to know the gospel is true, and here's why we know it's true. Here's where in the Bible you can go to see the principles of Christianity taught and explained. Here are some answers to the objections that you have. Because I can tell you, when someone is in the midst of suffering, telling them, have faith, is really just going to fall short. Because as much as you and I would like it, we can't force ourselves to fear something. If we could do that, we would all be forcing ourselves to feel happy all the time. But we don't. We have to work through our feelings a lot of times. We have to work through the issues we're going with. And it's understandably very hard to do things like believe in the goodness of God when you see suffering all around you in the world, or believe that God is in control of a world. If it's hard enough to believe those things, it can be even harder to believe the things that we don't usually have any emotional reactions to, such as the doctrine of a Trinity. I do think we should have those kinds of reactions to a Trinity. I think if we really knew the Trinity taught, we would just be so amazed at the concept. We had Rob Bowman show up on the show a couple of weeks ago to talk about the Trinity, and I gave him a line that Greg Coker of Stand to Reason, who had been on the show a week before, has said, that he said, I've only been to church and heard one sermon on the doctrine of the Trinity in all my years of church, and I was the one who preached that sermon. The only sermons I have ever heard on the Trinity have been the ones I have preached. That concerns me. These people are being prepared to go out there and do battle. They are prepared to come knocking on your door with the questions and the worldview that they have. The former head of a Christian research institute, Walter Martin, once said, "The average Jehovah's Witness can turn the average Christian into a doctrinal pretzel in 90 seconds or less." I agree with that entirely, except in this day and age, I'd probably make it 60 seconds or less, because the average Christian is unprepared for what's coming. They don't know how to discuss the issues. They don't know what they believe, and they don't know why they believe what they supposedly believe. And any time the witnesses come to your door, if you are not prepared to give them that answer, then you are just feeding into the stereotype that they have of you. See, I think the Jehovah's Witnesses are the ones that are indoctrinated, but they think we're the ones who are indoctrinated. And when they come and they see that we're not prepared, that we don't know what we're talking about a lot of times, that gives them evidence. If you slam the door in the face of a Jehovah's Witness, they take that as persecution. And that is a sign to them that they are doing what Jehovah wants them to do. So in other words, when you slam the door in their face, you are enabling them to do what they do. Now, if you're not ready for them, first thing to do, get ready. There was a proverb from China that asked, "What's the best time to plant a tree?" The correct answer is 20 years ago. The second answer is today. What's the best time to prepare for a Jehovah's Witness? The best answer is 20 years ago, or however long ago it is for you, depending on your age. The second best answer, though, is today. If you're not ready, start preparing today. Get a good book on the basics of Christianity. John Stott has an excellent one, for instance. It's one I own. It's a wonderful little read, written just fine for the layman. And do realize, you can speak these things on layman's terms. In fact, the Jehovah's Witnesses will be doing that. And be prepared to give that answer. In fact, if you go to my blog, deeperwaters.wordpress.com, there is what we have there, the Trinitarian Commentary, as one of my readers called it, where I went through the Bible, and I looked at several verses relevant to the doctrine of the Trinity, and I wrote about them. And I'm sure there are several that I missed, but I wrote about a good number of them. So you should be able to go there and find something that will help you with this. Well, Bowman's group that he talked about, that's an excellent group to go to. I recommend working with my ministry partner, J.P. Holding, at tectonics.org. My father-in-law, Mike Lacona, at Risen Jesus, he's got a free PDF you can get of what to say when Jehovah's Witnesses come to your door, and what to say when Mormons come to your door. Why not kill two birds with one stone? The best thing you can do, though, is just learn what you believe. And when you know what you believe, you will be able to recognize why the Jehovah's Witnesses don't belong to what you believe, as much as they might claim to. Now, I'll also tell you, the witnesses that I've had coming by here lately, when I've been engaging with them, the last time they were here, it was a couple of days ago or so, the last time they were here was actually Easter Sunday. So I spent my Easter debating with Jehovah's Witnesses some, which makes it a very blessed Easter to have indeed. What better way to celebrate the resurrection of the Lord than by debating Jehovah's Witnesses? Anyway, the witnesses were here, and we had this discussion. I think we only read one paragraph in What Does the Bible Really Teach and discussed it before we started asking these kinds of questions. And they'd said is that, you know, we can tell you are a very intellectual thinker. Now, when the people I'm meeting with like this start complimenting me, I do start watching closely because I know. Okay, trying to buttle me up some. Let's see exactly where we're going with this. And you referenced C.S. Lewis and Aristotle and all these other people, but how do you relate them to Scripture? What are they as reliable to you as the Scriptures are? And my answer to this was, of course, no, they're not. Aristotle was wrong about a number of things. C.S. Lewis was wrong about a number of things. I'm wrong about a number of things. Now, some of you might think, well, if you're wrong about something, why aren't you changing your mind? The answer is, I don't know what it is I'm wrong about. If I knew what it was that I'm wrong about, I'd change my mind. But this worldview that I hold, it's a big worldview, and I am quite sure I am not the only thinker in Christian history who has got everything right. I have changed my mind on some issues a number of years. When we had Steve Gregg on here, several years ago, I wouldn't have had Steve Gregg on because I wasn't of the persuasion that he is. Today, I am. I changed my mind, which is a sign of someone whose very signature is the ability to change your mind. And if you do not have the ability to change your mind upon seeing firm evidence against your position, there is something wrong. But I told him, these people are great thinkers, though. And I don't want to be so arrogant as to think that I am the only one who can know anything like this. See, I do believe the Bible is inerrant in what it teaches, but I don't believe in the inerrancy of interpretation. I think we start saying our interpretations are inerrant, like certain people I know have done, then we get into a dangerous position where we make ourselves to be the main authority, and if you disagree with us, there's a problem. You have to show that this is what the Bible teaches, and you have to give real arguments for it and answer the real arguments against it. And furthermore, you read people outside the Bible, because first off, if a biblical worldview is wrong, you really do want to know, I would hope. And so you read the critics of that view and see what they have to say. Even if what they say falls short, you need to have positive reasons on your own for why you accept the Bible as true. In our day and age, just like in most any day and age, in fact, it's not enough to just say, the Bible says. You need to know why the Bible is true, and you need to be able to speak the language of the culture that you are addressing. I'm not talking about being able to speak Japanese or Spanish or French or German. I'm talking about being able to speak the ideology of a culture. The culture says we value reason above all. Well, you learn the language of reason. If they say they value experience, you learn how to talk about experience. If you get Mormons who like to talk about their emotions, you talk about emotions. Just know who you're dealing with. In our day and age, people think about reason, supposedly, a lot. And so you have to show reason. Because too often, we're labeled as people of faith. And what's really meant by that is we are people who just believe things without evidence. I don't really like that labor at all. The faith is something that I do. In fact, it is my act of trust to God that He will keep His side of the covenant. And I trust Him because I have seen evidence that Jesus was raised from the dead. If there is no resurrection, I have no reason to trust Him. Why? Because He promised the Messiah would come. And if the Messiah did not come, then God's not trustworthy. That's it. So I stake everything on the resurrection. And so when you ask me, why do you believe the resurrection? Well, here's all these arguments. And we're going to have some people on later on, hopefully discuss that further. We had Gary Habermas show up before Easter to talk about the resurrection. I'm quite sure Mike Lacona will be coming on here sometime to talk with me about the resurrection and his book on the topic. But I want you to know there is a strong case that can be made out there, and Gary Habermas and Mike Lacona are two of the best people to go to get that case. So, coming back to these witnesses, then this is the kind of thing I was telling him. I said, I want to know what other people think and why. And he said, well, what about in Matthew when it says that Jesus praises his God that the truth wasn't revealed to the wise, but to the babes? To which I said, Jesus is mocking there. He's looking at these people who are going around calling themselves the experts, the doctors and such, and saying, you think you know so much and you are missing the big picture entirely. This is what made Nicodemus so different from everyone else. Nicodemus was a very educated, very learned man. And what did he do? He came to Jesus on his own to talk with him, to hear what he had to say. And whenever you see Nicodemus in the Gospel of John, it's always in a favorable light, even if the people around him aren't treating him favorably. Nicodemus, he's still doing what he needs to be doing. And so, Nicodemus comes and he wants to learn from Jesus, and Jesus is very blunt and straightforward. But this, again, as I said, is the difference of Nicodemus. Nicodemus is willing to learn. He's not an intellectual like all the others. He's one who says, I know a lot, but I want to hear this person's case for myself. Now, if he'd thought Jesus was wrong, he could have just as easily rejected him. But, you know, even if he had, he would have gone a step better than the others for being willing to meet with Jesus on his own. And what we know, he didn't think Jesus was wrong. After all, he helped bury Jesus, and I don't really doubt that Nicodemus was probably one of the first people to become a Christian, but, you know, you can't really demonstrate that from the text alone. And so that's what made Nicodemus different. Paul was an intellectual. The problem is not being an intellectual. The problem is the same problem we all have, and you can have it regardless of whether you're an intellectual or not. And that problem is pride. That pride keeps us from looking and saying, we might be wrong. Now, I was telling my roommate about this, my former roommate, I should say. I told the Jehovah's Witnesses that I have a very good system built to avoid pride. It's called marriage. In other words, I know as soon as I start getting private and start strutting my stuff and such, that my wife is not going to be very happy with me, and she's not going to want to be with me very much. And I'm quite sure she's shaking her head very vigorously right now with that. So, yes, she keeps me in check entirely. Like I said, an intellectual can have pride, but so can someone who's emotional. So can someone who's experiential. Any one of us can have pride. And that's part of subjecting our ideas to criticism. It's looking and saying, I am open to being wrong. In fact, the way I can tell atheists, Jimmy, who really are open to the truth, is that if I can come and I can waylay them in what they say, and they can back say something like, thanks, I really deserve that, or I was out of line, or I need to do some more studying. This kind of person gets the red carpet rolled out to them, because this is someone who's able to admit that they don't know something. Well, we are going to take another break. We'll be back and we'll be discussing more about some encounters I've had with Jehovah's Witnesses. If you want to join in, the number is 714-242-5180. Be back after this break.
Check out CYIWorldwide.com. CYIWorldwide.com, home of Grok Radio. Free music downloads, advice, prayer, and support. CYIWorldwide.com. Do you grok? Hey, thanks for listening to Grok Radio. Be sure to check out our website at CYIWorldwide.com.
Join Unituber and Army Girl for Christ as they discuss spiritual warfare, spiritual preparedness, the end times, life issues, and personal and spiritual growth. That's www.truthradionet.com. Truthradionet.com.
I'm Nick Peters. We are back with the Deeper Waters podcast. Our number to call in is 714-242-5180. Since we mentioned a promo talking about end times, I think this is an interesting topic to talk about with Jehovah's Witnesses. I've had a number of interesting encounters with them here. My former roommate is also a preterist, like I am. And it's amazing when you're a preterist, you can catch witnesses off guard two ways. First, with what you actually agree with them on. Second, with what you disagree with them on. For instance, when the witnesses come to me and they talk about living forever on earth and that this kingdom, God's kingdom would be on the earth, I look at them and say, yep, I believe that. When they go to Psalm 37 and talk about that righteous will inherit the land, I say, yes, I agree with that. And I do. I look at what Jesus said, the meek shall inherit the earth. I think he was right. I look at the prayer that your kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. And I look at Revelation 21, where you see the heavenly city Jerusalem coming down out of heaven to the earth. And to me, this all gives a message. This earth is here for a purpose, and God's going to use it. Which I will tell you next month, I do plan on having E. Calvin Beisner come on of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. And we are going to be talking about environmentalism and how important it really is. And yes, it does not mean that you have to go out and hug a tree to be an environmentalist. You can be an environmentalist without being what's known as an environmentalist wacko. But, anyway, these witnesses come and they want to talk about these things that are going to happen. Now, when my roommate and I were in Charlotte together, we had some come by and these witnesses had the gift of gab. We could not get them to be quiet. No matter what you said, one little thing, and they were off to the races immediately. If he's listening right now, I'm sure he's smiling and laughing some. But we started talking about Matthew 24 then. The Olivet Discourse, a favorite passage of people like myself. And they start talking about it, and then my roommate says, oh, we believe that will happen. Now, at that point, the witnesses have mixed reactions. One of them is ready to head out the door immediately. The other one is starting, well, you know, that makes sense. I don't remember what it is that I said, but I got one of them. Well, of course, I got both of them to stay. When I was coming to the door, we got to have him come back. But we started talking about the passage more. If you know about the witnesses, they have a very problematic eschatology because any predictions that they have made in the past have been wrong. Christ has not returned. Let me say this. The kingdom has not been established on earth. And this has been a huge cause of disappointment to a lot of witnesses, especially when they were told things like, don't get married, Don't start a career. Don't go off to college, because the end is coming. See, in many ways, the Jehovah's Witnesses are another one of these end times cult groups. And like so many other Jehovah's Witnesses, when you start talking end times and you get wrong predictions, it comes back to haunt you. And I really think the advent of the internet is one of the worst things to have happened for the Jehovah's Witnesses. Because with having the internet around, anyone can look up their false predictions and prophecies and see how wrong they are. Now, you can look in the Awake magazines and see how they've changed over the years to fit in with the prophecies about this generation. Because this generation keeps getting longer and longer and longer. But for a good Orthodox Protestant like myself, I'm going to say, yeah, we have some arguments for our view, some positions behind it. And so when this kind of thing comes up, we're prepared for it. Well, when we keep discussing with these people, they talk about it as doomsday coming in the future. Now, in a sense, there is, of course, a doomsday coming. They hold more to a kind of literalistic view of the tribulation, one that I would not hold to now. Jehovah's Witnesses don't believe in a rapture. For those of you who are interested in with that, I agree with them. I don't see a basis for them in the Bible, but they do think that much of Revelation is yet to come. I don't. This leads to a lot of discussion with him. Again, I don't bring out the prophecy aspect of it. In other words, I don't bring out their false prophecies. The only case I would do that is if I thought I had one who was seriously on the verge of seeing that what I was saying was right and what they were believing was wrong, and they need to have a reason to not trust the Watchtower. See, if you've ever seen the Matrix movies, I consider the Watchtower to be like the Matrix. If you don't know, the Watchtower is the company that puts out all the material the Jehovah's Witnesses read. It's their governing body and such. And the way you have to get past the Jehovah's Witnesses is that you have to have them unplugged from the Matrix. Because if you tell them something, they'll just go straight back to the Watchtower, they'll get another answer. It won't be a good answer. It won't be a true answer. But they'll believe it because it's the Watchtower. What you have to do is somehow find a way to call into question what the Watchtower is saying. It's not an easy task, because remember, these people get educated in Watchtower 3 to 4 hours each time, about 3 to 4 times a week. They are prepared with their message. They have been very well trained in it. And it is a shame that Jehovah's Witnesses spend more time devoted to a lie than we Christians spend devoted to the truth. But like I said, when they're here and you can talk to them about eschatology, I think it really does throw them off when you find the areas that you agree with them on. They're used to people disagreeing with them on everything. If you find something you agree with them on, I don't think they really know what to do. They can start feeling really good, thinking this one could be on our side, but then when you pull a rug out from under them and show, no, what you're thinking about here is really incorrect, and it gets problematic. I wrote about this in a piece of my blog. I think it's called Jehovah's Witnesses in Doomsday. So we were talking about Matthew 24, and here you're saying that this hasn't happened yet. We have not seen the worst thing that could happen. Because look, the writer of Matthew says that it's a time of suffering greater than any other time that has been. I said, okay. Do you think Jesus was a wise king? He said, well, he wasn't king when he was on this earth. I said, okay, well, he's king now, isn't he? Yeah, yeah. Do you think he's wise? Yes, yes, of course. Okay. Turn to 1 Kings 3. And when you get there, what is Solomon told? He is told that he will be the wisest king ever, that no one will compare, no king before or no king after. So, now see, if we follow your argument this way, Jesus was not the wisest king who ever lived, and you don't want to say that. And I pointed out that oftentimes this kind of hyperbole was used. Hezekiah was described as the most righteous king, but in the same kind of terminology. And yet, just a few chapters later, Josiah is described the exact same way. Now, when witnesses see this, they don't realize that they're reading a biblical idiom. In fact, times of suffering are described the same way in the Bible, as if there has never been a time of worse suffering than this. And what Matthew 24 is saying, it's just saying, this is how bad it is. We can use a superlative definition for it, because they didn't have superlatives like we do. I mean, if you want to say something's big today, you say it's big, but if you want to say it's the most big, you say it's the biggest. And that's how you get a superlative, or you say it's bigger in comparison. And so, when we're reading this kind of language, we should learn we're reading superlative language. We're reading the same thing when we see Nebuchadnezzar described as the King of Kings, for instance. And in fact, when we see Jesus described as the true King of Kings. And so what I told him was, this is superlative language in the Bible, and this kind of time happened. And I talked a little bit about the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD. Now, if you're squeamish, I do recommend you kind of avoid listening to what I'm about to say for a little bit here. But it's a hideous time. You had mothers who would cook their own children. Why would a mother do such a thing? It's amazing what you can do when you are cut off from all food and you're utterly starving. Literally, literally starving. Israel used to be a forested region. It's not because so many trees were cut down to crucify people. Thousands were crucified in this time. People wanting to escape and run out of a city would swallow their jewelry. Why? Because they knew it just passed out of their system later, and as messy as it was, they'd get it out and destroy its value. Well, when it started to be found out that the people were doing this, they would be killed as they left the city and cut open and have these value bars taken out of them. Blood would run through the streets of a city. I tell you, I am squeamish and I'm feeling nauseated right now just telling you about this. And I haven't even told maybe a tenth of what's happened in this time. This is how bad it was. So yes, I find it very easy to believe that this is the time that Matthew was talking about. Now, I also pointed out to the witnesses that, by my view, Jesus had already become king, and he was shown to be king in 70 AD when his enemies, the Jews at the time, not the Jews of our time, were judged. And his kingdom is growing. And I made sure to bring them to these passages that, look, let's go to Matthew 13. This is a series where we have Jesus' parables clumped together, lots of them. And two in particular work together. One talks about the kingdom of heaven being like a mustard seed. It was the smallest of all known seeds at the time. And yet it grows up and it becomes the biggest tree in the garden there until it fills the earth. Then the other image they have is a woman who's making a lot of bread, and she takes a little bit of yeast. She keeps mixing it in with the bread until it fills the whole batch of dough. This is what the kingdom is described as. We often think of a kingdom as suffering, as falling. The Bible doesn't present any image of a kingdom going away. Instead, it talks about the kingdom growing and growing over and over. Now, some of us today are saying, well, I'm looking at the world right now. I don't see the kingdom growing. Go to China. The church is growing rapidly in China. In several third world countries, the church is growing. We can't just look at America. And we can't judge how the kingdom of God is doing by looking at the evening news. We want to see how the kingdom of God is growing. We look and we see how many people all over the world are becoming disciples of Jesus Christ. And the numbers are growing still. And I, as a good preterist and someone who I think is seeing something taught in the Bible, says it's going to keep growing. And more than that, we should want to be a part of it. Something I wrote a while back, and it's a saying I've used several times, is that, see, we're often asked about those who've never heard. Now, that's an interesting question, but it's one the Bible never addresses directly. And the important thing about this is that Jesus gave us orders in Matthew 28. He said, go out into all the world, everywhere, make disciples of everyone, teaching them, baptizing them. That's plan A. Unfortunately for us, Jesus nowhere gives a plan B. He never says what's going to happen if we don't do the Great Commission. He never gives us any alternatives to the Great Commission. He just says, these are your marching orders, do them. Jesus has given us the orders. There is no plan B for us to follow. We are either going to be faithful Christians and fulfill the Great Commission, or we are not going to be faithful. Now, I think we'll still be saved, but like 2 Corinthians says, we'll be saved but escaping through the flames. Now, the other verse I brought out to them was also in Matthew. In Matthew 16, when you have a great confession of faith at Caesarea Philippi by Peter, and Jesus says to him, upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not stand against it. We can overlook this passage a lot of times, but it is very important for how we look at the kingdom. Notice what we're told. The gates of Hades will not stand against the church. Gates are defensive measures. You put up gates when you want to defend yourself from someone coming in. That's what all ancient societies would have done. What does that tell us? That we are going to tear down defenses. The church is supposed to be on the offensive. Now, right now here in America, we are by and large on the defensive, but I think it's time we got on the offensive. In fact, this is one reason I was going to have a guest on, but I had someone up today because my guest isn't well known, but I will be. Because we are in, I think, a golden age of apologetics, where there is more information than we've ever had before, and more people are learning about this. And if we can take this momentum, if we can get excited about the claims of Jesus, and if we can go with them, I look forward to seeing what we can do, and I have great hope that no weapon of government or anything else can prosper against what the church can do. Okay, we're going to take another break, and we'll be back soon. My number is 714-242-5180. I'm Nick Peters, and this is the Deeper Waters Podcast.
Are you tired of the same old corporate Christian music on the radio? Check out Music Surge on Grok Radio, playing Christian music that doesn't suck. Download episodes now at CYIWorldwide.com. Hey, this is Minister Grok. Thanks for listening. Although Grok Radio is free, there are costs to upkeep the website, podcast, and purchase Bibles and materials for street ministry. And while we are happy to pay this ourselves out of pocket, we will gladly accept any gifts if you feel led to support the shows and our street ministry. You can send a gift or love offering through our website at CYIWorldwide.com. Thanks for your support, and God bless.
Since we've just made a promotion about donation, I'd like to remind you all that Deeper Waters and Blog Talk Radio are both listener-supported. And I can definitely speak on behalf of Deeper that we need your support. Part of a Great Commission does require we have financial help available, just like it did in the first century. How did Paul set up all these house churches and such? You have people who had the resources who were able to do it. That's how he was able to do any sort of ministry. It wasn't free. And it still isn't free today. Some of you have been very blessed financially. And if you have, I ask that you just share some of that with the church, including us here at Deeper Waters. You can go to deeperwaters.wordpress.com, my blog. There's a donate button there. You can find out how you can become a donor. If you become a monthly donor, that would be even better. If you want, you can also give us a donation tax-exempt through tectonics.org, T-E-K-T-O-N-I-C-S. And keep in mind, Deeper Waters has a Facebook page. Please go and like it. And while you're there, there's a button where you can sign up for our monthly newsletter. And we would be glad to get that out to you. I'd like to talk about another phase of witnesses thinking, and that's their approach to holidays. Now, this is not an essential issue. You can be a Christian and not observe holidays. Probably pretty boring and not get invited to a lot of parties, but it's not an essential of a faith. It's not an essential of a faith to celebrate Christmas on Christmas or to celebrate Easter on Easter. I think those are good things to do, and actually I think you should celebrate them every day, but there's nothing wrong with taking aside one day of year to realize this is what happened. Easter is a special day to look back and realize, this is a historical faith. That's why you pick one time specifically to celebrate these things, because you're realizing these have a historical basis. Now, something like Christmas, you could say, well, we don't know for sure what day Jesus was born. Okay, for the sake of argument, I grant that. Although there really is an interesting article that I've read that gives a basis for saying Jesus was in fact born on December 25th. Based with Jewish prophecy and how that ties in with the date of Easter, I find it fascinating. Not conclusive, but I find it fascinating. But let's suppose we're wrong about the date Jesus was born. Here's something we're not wrong about. Jesus was born. At some time in history, the incarnation began. It became a reality. Jesus lived among us. He walked among us. But before he walked, he came as a little baby. You know, he was conceived of a virgin, yes, but from that point on, everything was natural for him. I'm quite sure Mary went through a heck of a lot of pain when she was giving birth. Was Joseph could have been one of the first fathers who wasn't told that you did this to me that time. But Joseph went through a lot of pain. I mean, Mary went through a lot of pain with what Joseph probably did too, though. Keep in mind that he took a wife who would have been seen as scandalous at the time. So, anyway, next week we're going to have David Enstone Brewer on to talk about the Jesus scandals. But David took a wife, and he would have been seen as a woman of ill repute times. and Jesus would have been seen as an illegitimate child, and Joseph was his father. But all this happened at a point in time. It is based on real events. In the resurrection, it happened at a point in time. People, listen to this for a little bit. Chances are you do the exact same thing I do, you hear this, that we all tend to do, just hear and think, yeah, we know that. But really try and think about it. Jesus, who is God incarnate, was born on this earth. We can tell the region he was born in. He lived among us. He walked on this planet at a point in time. He did miracles. He taught the Sermon on the Mount and other great moral lessons. He died on a cross. He rose again. And as Paul says in Acts, none of this happened in a corner. It was where people could see it. It was a real event. Now, if you hear something like that and you say, yeah, it's nice, but I've got my own problems in my own life, change your focus. I need to change it too. We need to get in our heads. This is real. And this is what the holidays remind us of. The holidays remind us at one point in time, Jesus broke in. God came into our world and he acted. And it wasn't in a way that pagan holidays were celebrated. It wasn't tied into a vegetation cycle or anything of that sort. It was tied into history. When we talk about people like Mithras and Dionysus and Osiris and those of these darn copycat ideas, which we will be having J.P. Holding on sometime. It won't be a live call-in show, but he's going to give us some time to talk about the copycat thesis. It wasn't anything like that. We can't talk about an incarnation, really, of other gods. We can't talk about resurrections of them, even. In fact, we can hardly even talk about virgin births of them. When you look at these cases, the parallels are really not there. Sorry to a lot of new atheist types out there that are listening and thinking that this information is so abundantly clear on Wikipedia and such. The scholarly world abandoned this decades ago. They don't treat it seriously. And there's a reason for that. Even the non-Christians among them. Look at people like Bart Ehrman in his book, Did Jesus Exist? He doesn't buy into the copycat idea. Or Jonathan Z. Smith's book, Drudgery Divine. In fact, I'm getting ready to read David Ulansey's book on Mithraism. As far as I know, he's not a Christian, but he thinks the idea that Christians copied from Mithraism is ridiculous. So, the reason I'm bringing this up is that the Jehovah's Witnesses do claim a lot of these are pagan holidays and such. Now, let's suppose something for the sake of argument. Let's suppose these were originally pagan holidays. Let's suppose that there really was a Saturnalia holiday celebrated on December 25th, and Christians took it over and turned it into the birth of Jesus. Okay, let's, for the sake of argument, we're going to grant all of that. Why should I still not celebrate? Because you know what that tells me? It tells me that Jesus is Lord still, and that we put the other pagans out of business. That Jesus takes days that the pagans set aside to celebrate their gods, and he reclaims them for his own glory. I think that's incredible, because that's the same message of redemption that you and I have. The same Lord who redeems the calendar can redeem us. The same one who takes things the world intends for evil ends up using them for good. Because unless you're looking for stuff up on the internet and such often today, only anyone knows about Saturnalia. But I mean, everyone knows about Christmas. Everyone knows about Jesus. We really need to think about how Jesus changes Everything, especially the calendar. Our calendar is divided into B.C. and A.D. because of Jesus Christ. Yeah. Even witnesses have to avoid, have to deal with this problem. And they do, I think, the same way that others do. They have this talk of common era and before common era, which I'd kind of like to ask these people. Tell me, what is it that differentiates common era from before common era? And the only thing you can look at is where Christ was born. Unless you can think of some major world-changing event that happened around the exact same time as the birth of Christ, and I really don't think you will, you just can't escape that Christ changed the calendar for us. To which, if you're one of those people who's who thinks it's before Christ and after death, mind you, AD does not stand for after death. AD stands for Anno Domini, and it's Latin meaning in the year of our Lord, which means when we say it is AD 2013, we are saying it is the 2013th year of our Lord. That throne is still inhabited. The witnesses, they don't celebrate the holidays. It's incredibly legalistic because they're so scared of buying into pagan ideas. You don't need to be scared of paganism. Okay? Now, I'm going to tell you, be cautious about something. So when it comes to things like the occult and such, be cautious. And seeing of the occult, sometime we're going to have Jeff Harshberger of Refuge Ministries coming on, I believe that's in July, to talk about his escape from the occult, where he was a Satanist, and what we can do about today. And I'll also tell you advice Gary Habermas to me has been, if you don't know about the occult, don't learn about it. Don't start studying and such, because it's that big of a grip, it's that big of a draw, and you don't want to risk it. Leave it to people like Jeff, who have. And I've studied several areas in the projects. I have not gone near the occult for that reason. I've followed his advice faithfully in that one, and I urge you to do the same thing. But witnesses are incredibly scared of this. They can even talk about items at garage sales you can buy that might have demons attached to them and such. If you're a witness, you can't watch Wheel of Fortune, because that talks about fortune in it, and you can't believe in luck. You don't have things like deviled eggs or deviled ham, because that's got the devil in it. Fear is a legalistic system. And if you mention around witness, if you have once been a Jehovah's Witness, and you meet them, and they find out you're an apostate, they won't have anything to do with you. And this can happen over anything, which, give another brief topic here, the blood transfusions. Children have died because they haven't got these blood transfusions that they need to get. And I've heard cases of Jehovah's Witnesses wanting to fly someone out in a helicopter in order to avoid them having to get a blood transfusion. And this comes from the passage in Leviticus that says you're not supposed to eat blood. Part of the old dispensation, but even if you wanted to follow it today, Orthodox Jews who don't believe in eating blood have no problem with blood transfusions. And there have been cases where a witness has gone to his family in order to save his child. He said he's had a blood transfusion done. And the family has said, we hate you and we will never speak to you again. Because as far as they're concerned, this witness has doomed his kid to hell, or ever annihilation, because of the action. He has gone against Jehovah. And this shunning that the witnesses do in this case, and in many other cases, it is incredibly serious. This is the same in all of occult, because your life is so dominated by the group. Everything you have is with the group, that you get cut off entirely. Even if your family, you're allowed to meet for necessary means, but other than that, you are not to communicate with them whatsoever. You are to shun them entirely. Now, I do believe there is a place for church discipline. In fact, I think Christians should be following church discipline a whole lot more. But when it comes to the Witnesses and the Mormons, these can end in suicide several times. There can be high rates of depression and anxiety within these groups because of how powerful a hold there is. And when you are meeting with a Jehovah's Witness, you need to keep that in mind. Chances are, if you and I changed our belief systems, we'd disappoint a lot of people around us, we'd hurt a lot of people, but they'd still want to show grace to us, they'd still want to love us entirely. Not so with the Witnesses. As I just said, you will be hated. When they give the command to take up their cross and follow him, it will really mean something. Remember, Jesus even said that your enemies will be the ones in your household if you follow him. And so when these people choose to really follow Jesus, they are putting everything on the line. And it's not a decision they're going to take lightly, and I don't expect them to. Especially since we, unfortunately, in the church tend to make our decisions so lightly and so flippantly about eternity that we don't really talk about the gospel with people wanting to come to the church and convert. We just want them to convert, and that's it. I really think when people come forward wanting to become Christians, we need to tell them what they're getting into and let them know and say, hey, here is everything right up beforehand. Are you sure you want to sign on the dotted line? Are you committed enough to follow Jesus that you would die with him if you needed to? If you had to, when push comes to shove, are you going to be faithful to Jesus? Are you willing to spend your life learning about him and making him your goal? Instead of chasing all these temporary things in life that aren't going to bring you that long-term satisfaction, are you really prepared to be a disciple of Jesus? Yeah, I think that's something that we can get from the Witnesses. They do know how to take their study very seriously. And we should be prepared with the exact same thing. And we are not the ones who are taking our study seriously. It is sad that more Jehovah's Witnesses are more serious about a false Jesus than we are serious about a true Jesus. Really let that sink in and think about it. If you believe Jesus is true, if you believe he is the Lord of all, what's really stopping you from being a full-time disciple of him so much? What's stopping you from learning more about him, from wanting to do more for him, from wanting to give your best to him? Like I said, people, the groups like the Jehovah's Witnesses, they are the unpaid bills of the church. It is our fault that they exist. And if we don't want groups like Jehovah's Witnesses rising up in the future, we better do something about it today. Yeah. We're going to be back with our last segment here. The call-in number is 714-242-5180. I am Nick Peters, and this is the Deeper Waters Podcast.
Check out CYIWorldwide.com. CYIWorldwide.com, home of Grok Radio. Free music downloads, advice, prayer, and support. CYIWorldwide.com. Do you grok?
Check.
Join Unituber and Army Girl for Christ as they discuss spiritual warfare, spiritual preparedness, the end times, life issues, and personal and spiritual growth. That's www.truthradionet.com. Truthradionet.com.
We are back with the final segment of the Deeper Waters podcast. I am Nick Peters, your host. Next week, as I said in the last break, I think it was, we have David Enstone Brewer joining us. He is a Bible scholar out of the UK. A few years ago, he had a book come out, The Jesus Scandals. We'll be talking with him about that. And since it's Autism Awareness Month, he's going to be telling us a little bit about the Asperger's community in England and where he is, and about how Jesus made things different for the disabled community. We have one aspect that we definitely have to touch on. I think it's fitting that this is the last aspect to touch on today, is salvation. This is a one that you really need to hit some witnesses with, because they really don't understand salvation by grace through faith. In fact, one great example we had was when my wife and I lived in Charlotte, and she can testify that she saw this happen. We had some witnesses at our house, and I started talking to them about salvation after a while, and that it's a free gift. You don't do anything to earn salvation. And I started reading Ephesians 2, 8 through 9, a great passage of, it is by grace that you have been saved through faith. And this not of yourselves, it is a gift of God, which interestingly in the Book of Mormon, it adds in that we are saved by grace through faith after all that we can do. Not very much good news to me there. Anyway, the good news of salvation, Ephesians 2, 8 through 9. I started reading this, and I'm dead serious about this. As soon as I started reading it and the witnesses recognized it, they got up and they started to walk out our door. To which I did leave a remark of, you know, I find it very interesting, but as soon as the message of salvation comes, you want to leave. I really hope that left a mark. I hope it was the stone in their shoe, as Greg Coker talked about, that would just get them thinking more and more about this. And I would like to clarify also that one reason I haven't talked about issues like the Trinity and such today is that we had Rob Bowman come on to talk about those issues. So I figured you can go back and listen to that program. But salvation, see, the reason the witnesses are doing what they do is for salvation. So you see, this is what they need to do to be worthy of eternal life. You know, it's really sad. Because I don't condemn, per se, what they do. I think all Christians should want to do something similar. All Christians should want to serve God with as much zeal. But we don't want to serve out of fear. Not fear in the sense of terror. If you mean fear in the sense of respect, sure. But we don't serve because we have to earn some. We don't serve because we want to get into God's good favor. We serve because we're already there. And this is the kind of message that they really need to think about a lot more that they don't see going on. How is it that you're saved? You trust Jesus Christ. That's it. Now, when I went to college, I did go to a college that was based on the Restoration Movement that teaches about baptism being essential for salvation. I don't agree with that, okay? But I will tell you what I agree with. Get baptized. And if you do that, you don't have to worry about that question. Act I did, and I can tell you, I have scoliosis, which means where I had it treated. I have a steel rod on my spine. That tells you how much I can bend. and I'm hydrophobic. I hate getting water on my face at all. I don't go underwater when I'm in a pool. And we were on our honeymoon. My wife and I went to the beach, and we got out in about 5 feet of water in the pool, away from the edge. She was holding on to me the whole time. She just wanted me to get out there and do it with her. And honestly, there was a part in my mind that says, she's trying to kill me. She's trying to kill me. I was that terrified. You know, I had to trust. Had to trust. Still do trust today. And what I'm telling you this is because I got baptized. And if I got baptized, most anyone else can get baptized. Yes, I realize there are still some people who can't. If you're in a wheelchair, for instance, you'd have a hard time. But I say, go out there and do it anyway. I think even my friends who disagree with me on this one would agree with me still that it's all by grace. Like, I'm not even one who holds to eternal security, but I think the only way you can lose it is apostatizing from the faith. And so I'm not going to say if you don't go out and you don't do any kind of evangelism and such, you're going to be cut off from Christ. I don't think that. But what I do think is you're going to lose some of the good rewards that you could get. Because part of the service of Christ is that you are learning to enjoy Him all the more. You are learning to be pleased with Him. And you serve even when things are difficult. When I lived here in an apartment here in Knoxville, alone and was single, there were days I got up and I was mad at God. And I can't remember at this time what it was, but it could have been any number of issues going on in my life. I was so angry. It didn't seem like God was taking care of me the way I thought He should. And what I'd do, I'd sit down at my computer and I'd still serve. I'd still debate all these atheists regularly and such. And because it's what you do. It's what you're supposed to do. I didn't feel like doing it a lot of times. There have been times that people show up for debate and like, oh gosh, them again. But a lot of times I do it anyway. Because serving Jesus should become a whole lifestyle for us. It's not what you do when you go out on a mission trip or when you volunteer at a church or do some special little thing like that. Serving Jesus is not something that's done part-time. It is a lifetime. It never stops. It happens in the home, at your friend's house, when you're out shopping, when you go to a doctor, when you go to school, when you go to work, everywhere, you are to be identified as a servant of Jesus Christ. What you have to ask yourself is, am I giving people around me the impression that I'm a servant of Jesus Christ or not? I mean, honestly, I'm quite sure a lot of people probably don't get that impression from me. And where they don't, I have to do better. And where they do, I have to ask, am I giving the impression of a good servant or a bad servant? And I don't know about you, but I want to be the best servant that I can. And I find it so amazing how much I can get distracted by all these things that don't matter. See, I can pick up a book and be reading it and think, dang, I wish I'd had this knowledge earlier. How much trouble I could have been saved in my life. And yet there are still times where it's hard to just force myself to pick up the book and read a lot of times and learn. And yet I know in the end it gives me the most joy when I do that, but I still find it difficult to do sometimes. Sometimes that's because, let's face it, there are a lot of bad books out there. Sometimes it's because I'm just lazy. And that's something we have to work on. But we need to keep in mind, like I've said, it should be simple because we have been given a free gift. You are forgiven. I want you to really think about that. Really think about it. Think about all the wrong things you've done in your life. You know what? Those things are still wrong. They're still evil. You can still feel guilty about them. But you are forgiven of them. My friend Chris Date runs the Fear Apologetics podcast, and recently he had D.D. Warren of the Preterist site on, and I listened to that podcast today before the show came on. I heard it on Dee Dee's podcast, actually, where she gave her testimony about her past and how it's impacted her today. No, I'm not going to tell you what it's about, but I found it an incredibly moving testimony to hear. And she goes right of what she said about forgiveness. Yeah, we have to learn to forgive ourselves, but we have to celebrate the fact that Christ has forgiven us. If he never gives us anything else whatsoever, he has given us forgiveness. What that means is he has given us access to God. See, when you read Romans 1, way I sum it up is, Romans 1, God's really ticked off at Gentiles, and he's not going to take it anymore. And you can hear the Jews from the church going, amen, amen, preach it, preach it. Until you get to Romans 2. God's very ticked off at Jews, and he's not going to take it anymore. And Romans 3 is, okay, we're all condemned, now what? And that's when you start getting into the message. You can be forgiven. You can be pronounced justified through God by faith in Christ. Which is the exact way when he says Abraham was justified. Forgiveness, it's our gift. You no longer have the wrath of God on you. We are told in Hebrews that we can boldly approach the throne of grace in our time of need. Good. Really think about this again. You have access to the King of the universe here. He is on your side, or more importantly, you are on his side. You are no longer opposed to each other. His judgment, his righteous judgment, will not fall on you. He has all right to cast you out of his presence if he wanted to. He has all right to do whatever he would want to you. He does not owe you a single thing. He does not owe me a single thing. Every time we say our prayers, to which my wife and I pray together every night, and every time we do, I need to stop and realize that he has given us a great gift in allowing us to pray. He's already given us everything, including the kingdom, as he says in Luke 12:32, but he's saying, ask for more. You know, C.S. Lewis has said before that the problem with us is we are far too easily pleased. It's not that our desires are too strong. Our desires are too weak. God has some really, really good things for us, and we miss them because we're chasing after lesser things. Now, of course, there's a time and place for all the pleasures that we have here, and God meant for us to enjoy them. But he meant for us to enjoy them in him, and realize he is the ultimate pleasure. He is our ultimate joy. And when you have this forgiveness, you have something a Jehovah's Witness does not have. They don't know about free salvation by grace through faith. And it is such a great message. They need to hear it. In order to get that to them, you're going to have to work through their defenses. See, apologetics, it's not just an empty exercise for intellectuals to flex our muscles. This is evangelism. The two are identical, I think. When you are doing apologetics, you are doing evangelism. You are giving the gospel or preparing the way for the gospel or cutting aside roadblocks to the gospel. It's all about the gospel. That's what apologetics is. And too often in our field, We do treat it as if it's just an intellectual exercise, and it's not. It is what we are to do to serve Christ. We are to grow in the grace and the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. Christians are not meant to be anti-intellectuals. And we're not all going to be intellectuals, but we're all meant to recognize the importance of the intellect. And we're not all going to be able to think logically entirely and work out a systematic system, but we should seek still to avoid having illogic in our system. We should still seek to be consistent. And if this is a weak area you have to rely on others. And I have my own weak points. And my wife, for instance, helps me with emotional things because she's much more emotional than I am. And she helps me get in touch with that side a whole lot more than I would have been before. And I'd say I was rather cold and callous in many ways before she came along, and she softened that right up in me. You know, women have a way of doing that to us guys. If you're single right now, if you get married someday, you can expect your wife is going to change you in several ways. And that's something that I tell her constantly, is that, honey, you don't know what an impact you have on me. And I realize she's listening to this right now, and I still say she still doesn't know what impact she has on me. Like, chances are, I really don't. But this is iron sharpening iron. This is how we grow together in grace. And on the other side of that coin, I've seen her becoming a whole lot more logical. In fact, on Easter, she got into a little debate with my dad on something. And I'm not going to say what it is because we're running out of time, but I say she blew him out of the water with her argumentation. I was just sitting and listening and thinking, I am so impressed right now. That when you're with the witnesses, as we get into our final minutes here, you need to be trying to bring up salvation sometime. Bring up real forgiveness. And one of the best ways you're going to have to do that is to learn that forgiveness yourself. You're going to have to forgive yourself for a lot of things. And you're going to have to forgive other people for a lot of things. And that's very difficult, even especially with someone like myself who can tend to hold grudges and have an attitude of how dare they. If someone does something, let it go. You have to, because you're only hurting yourself in long term with that. Leave them in the hands of God when someone does something wrong to you in that case. Now, of course, there are times that you do have to do legal actions and such, and I'm not against that. But when it comes to the personal, emotional side, leave it in the hands of God and move on. Because this will affect your witness to yourself, to those around you, and to the lost Jehovah's Witnesses that are coming knocking at your door before too long. And next time they come to your door, I hope you'll think about this podcast. If you have to come back and listen to it, come back and listen to it, okay? And be prepared. Do your study. These people need Jesus, just like you once did and just like you still do to this day. You need Jesus still, and you need to hear the gospel still. Next week, we are going to have David Enstone Brewer, like I said, coming on, and he will be talking about the Jesus scandals. I'm really looking forward to this program. David Enstone Brewer is just a first-rate biblical scholar, and it's going to be great to have him on. Until then, I'm Nick Peters, the Deeper Waters Podcast, and I thank you for joining me today.